I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, we added Shoji to our chant book for Tuesday morning. So we're alternating between Shoji and Fukan Zazengi. So I thought it would be good to talk about the meaning of Shoji. So we're talking about the line, just understand that life and death is itself nirvana, and neither dislike life and death nor seek after a nirvana. So I think the first thing we ask ourselves is, what do we think nirvana is? Because we often have preconceived ideas about what we think the goal is of our practice. Often we come to practice because we're suffering, so we're seeking something, the opposite of that, right? We're seeking. We probably wouldn't frame it to ourselves as nirvana. We'd probably say something like happiness. No, just our suffering less. But there's some way in which we think there's something better, and I'm not saying that practice doesn't help one suffering, so I'll give that disclaimer. But I think it's really important to look at our preconceived ideas about what we think the kind of goal of the activity that we're engaged in. So maybe we think nirvana would be some place that's perfect, some life that's perfect, something that we're striving for that has some way in which we never suffer, we never say the wrong thing, people never say things to us that we don't like, we're always skillful, just those kinds of ways that we think about how we would like things to be. Or maybe we think about nirvana as something that is kind of like heaven, where we die and then we go to this place called nirvana. That maybe we think that's the goal of our practice, but in our school it's not the goal of our practice. The goal of our practice is not to die and go to nirvana. The goal of our practice is not to get off the wheel of birth and death even, which is using closer to actual Buddhist language talking about this. We have the wheel of birth and death, which is the wheel of rebirth, being reborn over and over again in these samsaric conditions. And in the early Buddhist path, or in one Buddhist path, the idea is that you want to get off the wheel of birth and death. You want to achieve some state known as nirvana, although there's a lot of ambiguity about exactly what that might or might not be. But that's not what we're doing in Soto Zen. It's not what we're doing in Zen. And for the most part, it's not what's going on in Mahayana Buddhism. Mahayana Buddhism is based on the notion that a being who might be capable of getting off the wheel of birth would continue to return over and over again into this saha world in order to create and to create a situation that helps alleviate the suffering of all beings. So, but that's kind of highfalutin language. You know, really, what we're talking about here is about our own lives, our own state, and looking at these particular situations where we define our life as not good enough in some way, or in a way that we want to escape it in some way because we think that there's something better. You know, a kind of general axiom, you say, well, the grass is greener on the other side. We all heard that, right? So we know what that means in kind of relative terms. It means that we look over at our neighbor's yard and we think they've got it better. Or we look over at something else and we think it's got to be better over there if I can just get over there. A version of that in practice is, if I could just find the right environment for me to do my practice, it would all be okay. If I could just, everything was like really quiet, then I'd have good zazen. Now, even just the notion of good zazen is problematic. So we have this idea that there's something better somewhere else from where we are. So when we do that, our mind is pulled away from where we are, and it's all about, if I could only get to this other place, I'd be happier. So it's a kind of aversion. We don't really pay attention to our current situation. because we're busy trying to get somewhere else. So Dogen's saying here, just understand that life and death is itself nirvana. So this state of our life and our death is a dharma gate, like a huge dharma gate. It isn't outside of, nirvana is not outside of our birth and death. So when we find ourselves suffering, we might ask ourselves, are we getting caught in some notion that it's better over there? Now, the caveat to this is that I'm not talking about not responding to a situation that could needs responding to, right? I was talking to somebody on Thursday, and they said, who's not a Buddhist practitioner, and they said, well, I think of two versions of accept things, right? One version of accepting something would be like, we're supposed to just kind of just accept things, like just lie down and die. So if we're in a situation or we're witnessing a situation that is abusive, for example, we're supposed to just say, oh, well, you know, that's how things are. And the other thing, so that's one side, and that's not what I'm talking about. So the other side would be, in Buddhism, we say things just as they are, which is this willingness to be present for our life as it is right now and act from that place. So we're not acting from a place of what we think nirvana would be. So if you take something like addiction, somebody's addicted and you say, well, they shouldn't be addicted, that's bad for their health. So I'm going to reject them as they are right now, because I have this vision of who they're going to be in the future, who they could be in the future. Or we do that with ourselves. We say, well, you know, I don't like this part of myself, so I'm going to reject this part of myself, and I'm not going to address that part of myself. I'm not going to have any compassion towards myself because I shouldn't be that way. This is a version of this kind of nirvana thing. This is a version of saying, oh, well, it's better over there, so I'm going to cut off what it is here, and somehow I'm going to get from here to there. But it doesn't work that way. We have to be willing to say, this is what my situation is right now. This is my life as it is right now. And now I can settle into that. If you saw the weekly quote, I think the quote was, harmonize with everything, something like that. And my response was, relax. So this way that we can relax into our life, this way that we can just say, yeah, all right, this is what's happening right now. I want to really slow down and just be with my life as it is right now. And if it's difficult and in a hard situation, or somebody else is, it's really difficult with them, to really stop and be in that place and accept that that's where this place is right now. And then when you respond, your response is going to be more skillful. Your response is going to be more compassionate. And your clarity about, your discernment about what's actually happening is going to be clearer. Because you're willing to kind of stand in the middle of that and say, what is it? What is this? Right now. What's happening right now? No ideas about how I want it to be better. Well, we may have those, but not getting caught. Not getting caught by that. Not getting sharp-edged and black and white and critical about it, because it's not our idea of what we think it should be. And again, this idea of how things should be is another way we could say this is a kind of attachment to this idea of nirvana. If this other person would just do what I wanted them to do, it would be nirvana for me, right? So There's something else that's going on in this line. Shoji, the word shoji in English, so shoji's one word, birth and death. In English, when you write down shoji, what you have is three words, right? You have birth and death. So our tendency is to go birth, dot, 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 death, right? But actually, in the way it's written in English, it's birth slash and slash death slash. So it's all one thing. So what Dogen's saying here is, embedded in this line, is that when he says, just understand that life and death itself is itself nirvana, so it's this life and death of birth and death. It also can be translated both birth and life. So our birth and death as one thing is this Dharma gate to nirvana, this Dharma gate to this deep understanding of things just as they are. Not a preconceived idea of it, but a way that we're actually able to integrate with the totality of our experience. And that's, I think, what Dogen's defining here as nirvana. Not how we think it should be better or right or a certain way, or it's not necessarily about suffering or not suffering. It's about this integration with the totality of birth and death. So birth and death as a totality includes everything. Right? Everything. Nothing's left out. So this inclusion of everything with nothing left out is to settle into our lives. To physically actually presence ourselves for our lives. This morning I noticed when I was sitting zazen, I thought, oh, I can hear, you know, you could still hear traffic back here. But we can also hear, I think I heard seagulls, I heard crows, I heard other birds, I heard people talking at the very beginning of zazen. So even in the midst of that arises likes and dislikes. Even in the midst of that, you might say to yourself, oh, I don't like cars, and I don't like those people. So you can just tell me these are my likes and dislikes, right? I don't like cars, I don't like the people, but I love the birds. And my favorite bird is the crow. I like that one the best, right? And then you just let it go. You just let it go and experience the totality of that experience. But there's also a richness in it, in being able, in actually catching ourselves and seeing ourselves creating, just kind of like breathing, we create likes and dislikes. It's the nature of being a human being, I think, that we create these notions in our head about what we like or don't like. So maybe you said when we were in the other space, oh, if I could be in a quiet space, I know my zazen would be so much better than being here on 41st Avenue and listening to all that traffic all the time. Or maybe you said, oh, it's like the ocean, you know, the sound of cars going by. So we make up these stories for ourselves. But it's just birth and death. The sound of the cars is, and the sound of the birds, and the sound of everything, our whole life is just birth and death. Each moment is birth and death. The birth of the sound of a crow, the death of the sound of the crow. The birth of the traffic, the death of the traffic. I think back here it's actually more easier to see that, easier to understand that, because the sound is very much about coming and going. Just hear that? The other thing about that I'll just say is, in that moment, it sounded like somebody on a bicycle. In that moment, we are completely connected with that person. In that moment, we can see that there's absolutely no separation. When we hear that, and we cognize that in a certain way, and we understand something about the nature of what we just heard, that was a very, very short interval of sound that we just heard. And yet, to me anyway, it sounded like bicycle tires on asphalt. So then I put a whole thing to that. Well, there's a person on a bicycle, yada, yada, yada. So there's their story. But at the same time, there's this connection of we are completely in the same space with each other. We are not separate from each other. This birth and death is something that is shared with all being simultaneously, constantly together. We are in this together. The bicycle tires, the sound, the person, the traffic, our bodies, our connection. And we know what that is. We know what that's about. The fact that you can hear that sound and know what that is pretty amazing, actually. But it's also this deep connection that's happening simultaneously. And we're, our whole world, where, you know, Dogen, in Zen, we talk about sutras as and we talk about something being a sutra, the sound of something being a sutra, the sound of rain is a sutra, sound of a baby crying is a sutra, the sound of tires on asphalt is a sutra. What is that sutra? What is that teaching? How is it that inanimate objects speak the Dharma? It's this deep birth and death, this deep connection that we all have with the whole world. We wouldn't have that connection if we weren't of this world. We're not separate from this world. This is our world as the world, as we are the world. So this is this way in which it's this deep, deep, deep connection. And there's this birth and death. Our realization is in the midst of birth and death. It's not somewhere separate. It's not somewhere else. The implications of that are very deep, because as soon as we really are willing to presence ourselves for that, we have to go down deeply into our lives. We have to be present for our lives, present for the seagulls, present for the sound of the tires, present for each other, this way that we can do this together. And be willing to do the hard work. That's the other thing about it. Practice is not easy. Any kind of activity that asks us to be more somehow, to come out of our own little shell. But then when I said that, I thought to myself, being in our own little shell is tough too. It's like there's no escaping it, you know. So this is what we're being asked to do. Just understand that life and death, or birth and death, is itself nirvana, is itself this nirvana, this gateway that is our life, that is not separate from our life. And neither dislike life and death, nor seek after nirvana. So I would say, when we say dislike life and death, then we're talking about life and death for us as a sequential passage. We're talking about life and death as three separate words, or birth and death as three separate words, as this kind of separation that's problematic, that causes us to cling to our ideas, that causes us to want something different. Have to be careful about saying this kind of thing, because it's all right to want something to be different. That's not the problem. The problem is when we cling to our preconceived ideas about what is, in a way that keeps us from actually experiencing our life and the life around us as it is, so that we can respond to that in a skillful way. So, this means that we're not waiting for some other time to engage our lives. We're not waiting for some other place to engage our lives. We're not waiting until we can get ourselves to our fantasy monastery, where life will be perfect. I can tell you, Jaku can tell you, after living 4 years at Tassajara, you just bring your baggage to the monastery like you're bringing a U-Haul. You know, you and everybody else. it is true that you sit in the Zendo for a lot of hours, so the chances of having a fight with somebody in the Zendo are unlikely. But believe me, people can annoy you to no end when you're at the monastery. Anyway, everybody has their stuff, and so if you wait to some perfect situation in your mind to deal with it, that's not going to work. So we say in Soto Zen, we say practice realization. We say that we practice because it is an expression of our Buddha nature. We do not practice in order to find our Buddha nature. Our practice in and of itself is driven by and an expression of our Buddha nature. And the only place that that can happen is right now. It can't happen anywhere else, in any other time, in any other place. Somebody said to me once, a student said, "Well, you know, I know what the right thing is to do, but I don't want to do it right now." I mean, we all do this kind of thing. I know what I should do here, but I'm not going to do it because, well, it makes me uncomfortable in varying degrees. And it's about an attachment to self. I don't want to apologize now because if I apologize, that might open me up to being criticized in some way. So I don't want to expose myself and make myself vulnerable in that way. And so that's a good thing to look at. You know, that's a good thing because sometimes maybe it's not. You know, this stuff is very hard to talk about because it really is circumstantial. And inevitably, when I talk about this and use this kind of language, somebody thinks, "Well, what about this? What about if somebody broke into your house and they have a gun and they're shooting you? Should you shoot them back?" But we're not talking about extreme situations here. We're talking about those times when you need to say, "I'm sorry," and you just don't want to do it, and you're not in some kind of life-threatening situation. You're not in an abusive situation or anything like that. You just don't want to do it because it makes you uncomfortable. Maybe the very fact that we know that we should be doing this thing and we're not doing it, that's our Buddha speaking to us. But our Buddha speaking to us says, we'd also like you to practice with this, which is doing the hard work of actually apologizing, for example. That can only happen in the present moment. That can only happen right now in this birth and death, not in some other place. So that's what we're being asked to do. We're being asked to drop the self. Dogen says in Genjo Kowon, which I say a lot because I really love this, to carry the self forward is delusion to allow myriad things to come forth as a realization. To carry the self forward is this way in which we just can't do what we know is the right thing to do at that moment. We don't want to work with it. It's easier not to do it than it is to do it, or at least it certainly feels that way at the time. So our practice has to be in this lifetime, in this birth and death, not waiting for some other place and time to practice. When we do that, our practice becomes a guide in and of itself. When we do that, when we investigate that, when we engage our life that way, every time we do that, the next time we're faced with something, we're able to practice with it in a way that's easier and deeper than it was before. And the only way we can do that is by doing that right now, in this present moment. Moment after moment after moment. Birth and death, birth and death, birth and death. Expressing the totality of this life. So this birth and death, this lifetime, is our Buddha field. This is the field that we play in. We disport ourselves in this Buddha field, in this Saha world. We are struggling, neophyte little bodhisattvas trying to get through our daily lives and do the best that we can. So we just keep coming back to that. We just keep coming back to that. We keep coming back to, and if we do it with a kind of wisdom and compassion towards ourselves, so of course compassion is this way in which we kind of stick to it, we stick to it, we pay attention, we find that place where we don't push ourselves over the edge into some kind of, you know, nuttiness, and but we don't like just sag and be lazy. So this, again, this is part of the reasons that we have Sangha and teachers, so that we can find out what that edge is for us, you know. But that we pay attention to our lives and encourage ourselves and make this effort over and over and over again. We have to find a way to make the effort so that it's not overwhelming. We have to find a way to make the effort that's intelligent and compassionate with ourselves and with others. I would say that's kind of the nitty-gritty of doing this. We take the practice, we take the admonitions, we take the precepts, we do all of those things that we can intellectually frame to ourselves what we're up to, and we start applying them to our lives. And the only way we can do that is to do it moment after moment after moment. And, you know, that's it. And then sometimes we go, oh, man, I got to go to the movies, you know. But that's part of it too. Oh man, I got to go to the ocean, sit on the beach and listen to the surf. That's part of it too. That's not something separate. That's not something, you know, outside. That's part of the whole process. That's part of your wisdom. That's part of your, wow, this has been a tough day, you know. I'm going to go home and relax, however that might be, you know. So that's part of this too. It's not some kind of grim slog through our life. It includes the joy. It includes all of those things too. So just understand that life and death is itself nirvana, and neither dislike life and death nor seek after nirvana. So I'm going to stop there.